My main advice about how to prepare, in addition to you being as independent for your meeting your own needs as you possibly can be.
Welcome to a little bonus, a little extra episode, Grimerica Outlawed. We had Whitney Webb on a week or two ago, and it was late. We got the time zone differences, and because unfortunately, Graham and I still can't do a lot of Western daytime podcasting because I still have this full time job. GrimericaOutlaw.ca.
So it was a Saturday.
So it was a Saturday. So we did it, but we couldn't get her for the full 2 hours. So we only got her for a little over an hour. So we decided that couldn't quite count as a full episode, especially a full plus episode for our plus supporters. So we decided to do it. We'll just dump it out as a little bonus app. What a fantastic bonus app, Whitney Webb. It's a good one.
Yeah. Yeah, I just want to mention a couple of things because she brought up counter economics a couple times, and there's a couple things that are happening in Canada here. There's the freedompages.ca, and it's a group of volunteers, and it's just a vision born from the devastation wrought by the measures instituted in the name of fighting COVID. And it's an online directory, basically, that seeks to connect freedom-loving Canadians with like-minded businesses. So this is kind of what we've been talking about, you know, doing our own thing freedom-wise, where you don't have to worry about, you know, masks or vaxes or anything, right? It's just basically there's no discrimination at all, right? It doesn't matter about your medical status or your personal beliefs or anything. So this is a resource created by a group of volunteers, regular folks with no political affiliations, as an effort to push back against the draconian regulations and to recreate a world in which we can all thrive once again. So I'll put a link in the show notes. It's thefreedompages.ca. There's a whole bunch of different things in there. Looks like a lot of it's building back east quicker than out west, but I mean, I don't know. I just thought somebody put it in our chats, and it's just a good thing to promote right now. There's services, employment, dating, buy and sell, alternative media, events, food and drink, real estate, socials. I mean, we got to start somewhere, right? So I think this is a good sort of counter economic tool that we should be using. We should be using these digital tools against them. I mean, Whitney Webb got majorly censored, right? Her Patreon got taken down. She's one of the ones that obviously is over the target, pushing back hard. And we just had a couple episodes. I got another email from Spotify, or not from Spotify, but from Libsyn, saying, hey, this has nothing to do with us as your podcast hosting service, but Spotify deleted another couple episodes. So what was it? True, Ought, and Legal Man, I think, were the next two they tackled. And I mean, you know, Spotify, they have no clue that most of the people, 95% are probably that have listened to that have already listened to it. You know, there's not going to be, it's not like we're JRE and we're getting hundreds of thousands of people 3 months after the episode came out. But I guess they care that much that they're deleting these episodes. So
they're doing their due diligence.
They're doing their due diligence, you know, no more disinformation, they say about, I don't know how they justify it.
So we're weeks away from being completely deplatformed by Spotify with Grimerica Outlawed, clearly.
Yeah.
Because they're only going to delete so many episodes.
So, I mean, this is why we really appreciate your support. And you guys have been great. And
this is why we self-host.
And we need, and you know what else? Yeah, this is why we self-host. And you know what else, too? We need you guys to share the episodes, obviously, to market it. That's because we don't have a huge marketing thing. And, you know.
We got no marketing budget.
But, the self-hosting, I mean, you know, we are insulated but it just makes it more difficult as all these platforms start taking them down. That's why we're not on YouTube. That's why we stream the first halves on Rockfin.
So. That's right. Rockfin.com/Grimerica if you want to check that out. The other thing you can check out, we did have a couple major titles, or at least one major title, published this week over at the audiobook company, Adult Brain Publications. It's adultbrain.ca. If you head over there, The Secret Teachings of All Ages, The Tomb, what is it, like 34 hours and 46 minutes audiobook read by Graham Dunlop, produced by us. You can check that out. Get it with your Audible credit or buy it or however you do that. I think it's in iTunes and a couple other places too. Any place you can get audiobooks, it should be there. It's also, we had Secret Doctrine Volume 1 Cosmogenesis available as well, and a bunch of other titles. All the titles are at adultbrain.ca. It links to Audible, so you can pick them all up. But we're starting to get some bigger titles publishing there. Of course, Mysticism and Logic is coming out right away. Hamlet's Mill. Ooh. Secret Doctrine Volume 2 Anthropogenesis. Oh,
that's a great one. Almost done that one.
Thought Forms by Annie Besant. So a couple of great audiobooks coming out. If you guys want to get on top of that, adultbrain.ca. We haven't really been talking about that a whole lot, but we're getting ready to start pumped out a little harder as we get some bigger titles in there. So do you want to give us a little Whitney bio?
Yeah. She's from unlimitedhangout.com. She's been a professional writer and researcher and journalist since 2016. She's written for several websites, and from 2017 to 2020, she was a staff writer and senior investigative reporter for Mint Press News, and she also currently writes for The Last American Vagabond. So I'll put a link there in the show notes to her website, and there's some great articles. The one that we were kind of talking about in the show is pretty fantastic. It's about sort of like transhumanism and the corporate takeover, basically. And the way these DARPA individuals transition to other companies that just get created out of nowhere in the middle of the pandemic. And, you know, it's all that good stuff.
Fantastic stuff. Amazing. Yeah, so check all that stuff out. We encourage you to check out Whitney's stuff. Check out adultbrain.ca. Grammerica.ca has, if you go to Grammerica.ca, it's the site of our other podcasts. You got links to all of our stuff, the store, the trips, the chats, the socials, all that fantastic stuff. Speaking of fantastic, enjoy this chat with the wonderful Whitney Webb.
All right, Whitney Webb, thanks for joining us on Grammerica Outlawed.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
We were just talking, does that fit, does that, all that stuff, the segregation of the unvaccinated, fit into all your latest research? In a way?
Well, some of it, right? So I've been writing about stuff like vaccine passports for a couple months now. And I was talking about, I think in December, I did a whole series on Operation Warp Speed and its relationship with like race, how a lot of the vaccine allocation policy was being trying to target ethnic minorities specifically, but they didn't want to make it explicit as a way to avoid promoting further vaccine hesitancy in those groups that are already known for being vaccine hesitant.
For good reason.
So they tried instead to, they openly talked about this, trying to pick specific sectors of the workforce that have high representation of ethnic minorities or prisoners or ICE camps and have those be vaccinated first. So, and then, of course, you have a Palantir being involved in the vaccine allocation policy. And, you know, that's Peter Thiel's company and also the CIA's company. So, you know, it was just interesting. But with the vaccine passport stuff, a lot of that is really essential to what is coming in other spheres, I guess, outside of public health in the coming months, you know, because there's this the way they've set up the vaccine passport infrastructure. It was set up by a Microsoft guy and also a World Economic Forum backed foundation called like the Commons Foundation and a lot of other big names. It was about tying in vaccine passports with digital identity and also financial activity. So there's this push by the World Economic Forum right now. And CyberPolygon is part of this to basically manufacture consent for and implement a global policy where internet access is linked to your digital identity, like a digital biometric identity. And so they want to eliminate any possibility of anonymity and privacy online. And they also want to do that for financial transactions as they move to central bank digital currencies. So they also have plans in place, not only to have a, you know, continue the war on cash, as it's often called, but also basically have this war on crypto, specifically cryptocurrencies that like favor anonymous transactions. So like Bitcoin and Monero are probably going to be the ones that they go after specifically. And that's why ransomware is a key part of this drive, because a lot of those, if you look into it, including like the Colonial pipeline hack that wasn't actually hacked at all, and the FBI magically found all the money. The FBI's partnered with this World Economic Forum cybercrime thing directly, which is pretty telling. That's pushing for all these initiatives I'm talking about. You know, it's basically the ransomware thing. They're framing it in mainstream media and elsewhere as necessary. It's necessary to go after cryptocurrency and eliminate anonymous transactions so they can stop the cyber criminals and stop ransomware. So
this is why they're trying to divide us. Now, they're trying to blame the unvaccinated as for the division in America right now. And you're seeing this on the mainstream media.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. It's part of this. I didn't finish my thought. Sorry. So it's part of this larger effort that's aimed at basically complete surveillance and control of everyone. The vaccine passport's a segue into that.
You mentioned limiting internet access. I mean, didn't they start to try, like, throw that through a trial period with the December or the January 6th problem there? They had a couple people and they limited their access to the internet. I mean, aren't they starting to do that? Yeah, like, do you think that's going to be a thing? Would they connect to the...
Mm-hmm. That was really the opening act of this war on domestic terrorism and this World Economic Forum partnership against cybercrime, as it's called, is very much a global model for that. And I'm doing a report on that that'll be out next week at The Last American Vagabond. And there's a lot of similarities between this the World Economic Forum's policy documents on this and Biden's domestic terror strategy. It's almost like they were written by similar people. Who knows?
Do you think, I mean, it's hard for people to wrap their head around. I mean, you've been digging into this for so long. Do you think the vaccine pass, do you think this is going to be come to fruition? I mean, are they really going to keep pushing this, or is it going to be, I feel like it's on the verge of falling apart. There's too many hesitant people. There's too many injuries. But you think it's going to fly?
Well, I think they're definitely going to make a concerted effort to make it succeed. In the U.S. specifically, they're trying. They've openly said they're not really going to have like the federal government policy made on it because they know how unpopular that would be. But they're actively promoting private sector adoption of it. So that essentially means that all the big corporations that increasingly own everything in the U.S. are going to demand it.
Yeah.
So, you know, things like big corporate chains, which you can, you know, a lot of the restaurant chains, for example, that you see nationwide in the U.S., the supermarkets, things like Walmart or Whole Foods owned by Amazon, stuff like that, you know, they'll probably demand it. But I think it for, you know, people that are committed to a particular, to not being part of that system. I mean, there'll still be places to slip through the cracks, I think, even if they go through that way. But a lot of people in the U.S. Don't have that kind of commitment necessarily. They just sort of, you know, want their lives to be easy. And they're trying also this whole like digital wallet thing. The next round of stimulus, they're going to pay out in like Fed coin and the digital dollar once they have that set up. They've already said that future stimulus will be tied to that. So people that want government benefits, as you know, the economic system and you know, the economic situation gets increasingly worse, people that want that assistance are going to be forced into that system. And a lot of people, unfortunately, probably will fall into that. And that's why it's really important to prepare now. With counter economics, producing as much of your own stuff as you can, or, you know, living in a community or building a community if you live in a bigger city or more urban area that can allow you to, you know, operate in this type of situation they're creating.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like they didn't have their shit together. Why don't they have all this ready? I mean, it seems to me like this thing's been planned out. Why don't they have the digital currency ready, the digital, like they seem to be scrambling around. I mean, is that just making it seem like that?
I think they do have it ready, but the problem is I think they're getting a lot of resistance from certain factions, maybe in the financial system, that don't want to buy onto it quite yet, or that are unwilling to face, you know, client resistance from that sort of stuff. You know, it's kind of hard to know exactly, but there obviously is a major effort to sort of reset the economy and a lot of the big banks that have been inflating a massive financial bubble over the last, you know, decade or so. Definitely know that at some point the collapse of that is inevitable and they don't want to be blamed for it. Like they were in 2008, they were correctly blamed for it then, right? But they obviously got some backlash. So the way to avoid backlash is to have a cyber attack. Which is exactly what like Cyber Polygon and all this stuff the World Economic Forum does simulates. You know, they're simulating a massive attack on banks, essentially. This year, Cyber Polygon is different, but the previous one was mostly banks. But banks are major participants in that affair. And what better way to blame the collapse of the system on a faceless hacker, which you can assign to X terrorist group or, you know, this nation that the U.S. doesn't like or whatever, and then absolve the banks completely of any blame.
And blame Bitcoin. That's in their benefit. Blame Bitcoin along the way as well.
Right. Well, exactly. Well, you know, that's part of this effort to eliminate privacy and anonymity online and in your finances completely, because they want to be able to track all of that. So what you do online, they want to know who's doing what, who's visiting what sites, controlling that, because censorship is a big part of all of their policies going forward, both, you know, in the U.S. with the Biden administration and the war on domestic terror, just focus largely on social media censorship, if you read the strategy itself, but also World Economic Forum recently called for more censorship in relation to vaccine hesitancy and all this stuff. And we're seeing this with, you know, governments across the world. Canada narrowly defeated a major censorship bill, I think, either today or yesterday. But there's a lot of these efforts to censor things. More and more, because they want to track where people are going online and prevent them from reaching certain avenues of information. And they also want to be able to track your finances. And, you know, something like Bitcoin and Monero and some of these other cryptocurrencies that prioritize privacy, it makes it harder for them, not for everyone that uses that stuff, because obviously if you're going to be trading, you know, Bitcoin or whatever on Coinbase or some like big exchange, you know, it's different than using it in a more secure way. That's, you know, favors anonymity more, right? But they're trying to go for people that know how to get around, you know, the system as it is right now. They want to prevent that from happening.
Technically, our politicians voted for C10, but our senators kiboshed it.
Oh, really? Oh, okay. Yeah,
which was kind of, I mean, the interesting thing is that the senators said like 2 months ago they were going to kibosh it, but the media completely ignores that and just runs with it and runs with it and runs with it. And then it gets to the senators and sure enough, they kibosh it. But I mean, we don't vote for our senators here in Canada. So, I mean, that's not going to last for long. Right now, there's a big push in Western Canada to start voting for senators. We'll see if that makes any waves or not. But
so are the senators like the House of Lords in the UK then?
Yeah, pretty much.
Sort of appointed. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You don't own any land in Canada. It's technically all on rent from the Queen. And
Yeah, I'm aware of that. Yeah.
But Canada's in the middle of a big social upheaval over the Indian Act. So it's going to be interesting to see where all the pieces scatter out.
Yeah, didn't you guys just have a bunch of Queenie statues taken down in relation to that?
Well, I think they've been trashing a lot of John A. McDonald statues lately. Because, I mean, the main thing in Canada is just a ton of ignorance. There's been zero education on any of that for ever. And now,
yeah, well, in the U.S. too, I mean, a lot of those boarding schools, mandatory boarding schools for Indigenous people happen in the U.S. too. And they also have mass grave sites. But there was no upheaval in the U.S. over it.
That's where
Canadians are mad about it.
That's where positive. We got the idea back in the day was from the industrial schools. We just sort of perfected it. But the U.S. always had sort of, so I think the reason no one's in upheaval in the U.S. is because the U.S. relationship with the Indigenous was very different. It was very much more warlike from the get-go. So it was a little bit easier. I think it's an easier pill to swallow when it was war from the beginning, whereas in Canada, they kind of played the role of, No, we're not fighting. We're all good. We got your back. Yeah. The paternal fucking benefactor is how they play it here, which is a little more underhanded in the long run. Yeah, so I think that's why you see more of it here.
They did a mix of both of those strategies, the U.S. strategy and the Canadian strategy then in Chile with their colonization strategy, except for the Mapuches, which are still the dominant indigenous group in Chile today, basically the only one that wasn't largely wiped out. And but that's just because the Spanish, it was the only indigenous group encountered by the Spanish that the Spanish couldn't beat. And they were like, okay, you scared the shit out of us. We're going to leave you alone. And they gave them sovereignty. But then when Chile became its own state, they came in with like a bunch of like, you know, like cannons and stuff and just like massacred people. So they call it the pacification of the Mapuches down there. But in some of the other areas, they tried the whole paternal benefactor thing and didn't really work out. They were like slave work camps, basically. So
you've experienced some censorship yourself pretty heavy, right? The financial censorship as well. Like, do you want to mention that a little bit?
Well, yeah, a little bit. I did get deplatformed from Patreon, and that was because I wrote an article that was part of that series I mentioned earlier on the vaccine rollout and its relationship with race. I talked about the Oxford AstraZeneca vaccine, the background of those developers, and how those developers are tied to something called the Galton Institute, which until 1989 was known as the Eugenics Society. And its members in the early 20th century are very prominent names that most people will probably know, like Winston Churchill, John Maynard Keynes, the famous economist. Margaret Sanger was part of its U.S. branch. Julian Huxley was its leader, the brother of Aldous Huxley, first director general of UNESCO, a very open eugenicist that just a year after the close of World War II said, we must make the unthinkable thinkable again, in reference to eugenics, which was pretty bold to say at the time. And then a year later, he coins the term transhumanism as an extension of eugenics. The Eugenics Society loved eugenics so much they chose not to take it out of their name until 1989, but they changed their name to the Galton Institute, named after Sir Francis Galton, who's the guy that invented eugenics as a racist pseudoscience. And today, these people refer to Galton, not as crazy racist dude that tried to measure heads and noses like the Nazis would later to like create, you know, who's the fittest of the race or whatever. But instead call him a brilliant 19th century polymath. Like, it's just crazy bullshit. The guy that developed the AstraZeneca vaccine, Adrian Hill, spoke at their 100th anniversary, celebrating 100 years of being racist, eugenic assholes, basically. And his mentor, this guy named David Weatherall, is a longtime member of the Galton Institute Eugenics Society. He joined back when it was still called the Eugenics Society, and he's a very prominent guy in UK academia. He's dead now. He gave a speech to the Galton Institute, the recording of which was never released. I wonder what he said. We'll never know. I talked about those connections and also how the Jenner Institute, which is where what Adrian Hill runs at Oxford and the part of Oxford that produced the AstraZeneca vaccine, that the Jenner Institute in the past in 2009 was very controversial for the way they conducted trials. They knew from animal trials that this particular vaccine was ineffective and not going to work, but instead they went and did a trial of it anyway in South Africa on infants, and seven babies died in it. And the way they conducted it was very unethical. They didn't give proper informed consent to parents. They obfuscated stuff they already knew about negative side effects from animal trials to parents, among other things. So obviously that doesn't bode well for the AstraZeneca vaccine, because that particular vaccine in 2009, Adrian Hill had a personal financial stake in the success of that vaccine, which is why it was likely forced into human trials when it should not have been. And of course, the AstraZeneca vaccine, he too has a personal financial stake in that through his company Vaccitech, that holds a lot of the patents on that vaccine. And he basically did the same thing with the COVID-19 vaccine, which, they covered up animal trials. There was a lot of controversy about the early research they released about that particular vaccine. And then it gets rolled out widely after my article about all this stuff gets censored. It's been largely banned in developed countries now across the world for various reasons, because, you know, they obfuscated its adverse side effects. And if you look at the human trials, they didn't even use a placebo. They used like a meningitis vaccine that has its own adverse side effects tied to it. So that way, people that received the AstraZeneca vaccine in trials, if they had an adverse effect that was in common with this meningitis vaccine, they would be like, oh, It's not the AstraZeneca vaccine, essentially. So that's a pretty dirty way to conduct a vaccine trial. And that wasn't, you know, publicly made public knowledge at the time. So some of the people that have died from that vaccine, you know, if Patreon hadn't decided to censor my article, maybe they wouldn't have taken it. You know, I mean, it's just really ridiculous, the type of censorship, you know, on vaccine coverage, because it's clearly, you know, if you're warning about the risks of things that were produced in a really rapid timeline in like less than a year, a lot of it using technology, vaccine production technology that hasn't been widely tested and used, and the long-term effects of which are unknown, you know, raising, reasonable concerns about that gets you censored and deplatformed even now. So it's pretty messed up.
Well, that's probably closer to the standard practice for testing vaccines that they've been doing for the last 30 years. I mean, I was kind of excited for a brief second when they said they were going to do actual placebo trials with the COVID vaccines, because that's never fucking happened with any of the other vaccines that they've made. But I mean, well, yeah, then recently, they turned out to scam. Now that turned out to be all bullshit anyway. But that's their game, is whenever they do a test for a new vaccine, the placebo group has every other shot except this one. And it's like, oh no, it's just normal. So there's no, I mean, yeah. There's not on record right now, there isn't a single actual placebo study, to my knowledge, of a actual placebo versus the main childhood vaccines even. Because they say it would be unethical to do that, because we can't just leave these poor kids unvaccinated just for science.
Wow. Yeah. Well, I knew that it had been going on for several years, but I didn't know it was that old of a practice. But it's honestly not surprising when you look at, you know, some case studies like the anthrax vaccine, for example, back in the 1990s and stuff. I mean, that's really crazy story and intimately tied to the anthrax attacks themselves. So pretty nuts.
Well, it seems like a theme of your latest work seems to be on, you know, kind of uncovering this covert racism agenda from the elites. But is that turning into just race, not racism, but classism against us now? I mean, are they being, because it's hard for us to see. There's so much blame on systemic racism and just white people now, never mind about the elites that have been pushing like stuff you were talking about with, you know, vaccines to certain populations and stuff like that, which is very damaging. But do you think is it turning into just transhumanism, classism? I mean, is it, try and tease that out a little bit, because it seems to me like you're.
So the eugenics of, you know, the 20s and the 30s is different than what it is now. And so what I mentioned earlier about Julian Huxley, you know, he made this call as the leader of this elite academic, this elite institution, the Eugenic Society, but all their members were really prominent people in the UK in politics and economics and philanthropy and what have you. And he said, we have to find a way to make the unthinkable, i.e. eugenics, thinkable again. And that obviously involves a change of what eugenics is. And so if you look at what he said about a decade later about how to affect that change and how to make the unthinkable thinkable again, he does so by coining the term transhumanism and saying that basically what needs to be done is combining like the eugenic science of genetic engineering with neurotechnology to create, you know, a new organism, essentially, of man merging with machine. So what we've seen really since then in the 50s, and the military in the U.S. was on board with this from the off. And even back then, not that long after Huxley wrote those words, people at MIT like Marvin Minsky, you know, he had got involved with the U.S. military and started developing a lot of AI stuff. Marvin Minsky, of course, later becomes with transhumanist eugenicists like Jeffrey Epstein, for example, in the decades that followed. But a lot of, you know, research was done, you know, between academia and the U.S. military to advance that transhumanist agenda during that time. And that's why, you know, in recent decades, the Pentagon's DARPA has really been leading on a lot of these both fronts, both in terms of genetic engineering and bioengineering and, you know, neurotechnology, transhumanist, augmentation of the human body, nanobot stuff, brain machine interfaces, all of that. So it's undergone some changes. And one of the, like, the current treasurer of the Galton Institute actually wrote a book about eugenics in the 21st century and praised how genetic engineering and gene therapies and gene editing and all of this stuff would herald a new age for eugenics. So essentially what we're really seeing is through transhumanism, the elite becomes something, you know, in a separate augmented class from the underclass, and it stops becoming so much about a master race in terms of, like, we choose this ethnicity to be the master race. It becomes about, you know, the elite become their own separate race through, you know, augmentation technology and gene therapies,
or just the ability to track and control,
essentially.
Yeah. And the ability to track and control the behavior now, not just, you know, the marketing aspect of tracking, but now it's to control your behavior. Like, I think you wrote about in your latest article.
But if they're doing it, that's good, because judging by their tech so far, it's all going to break down and they'll just be like glitchy fucking robots and we can get back to business.
Well, this is part of the problem is in your article, you talked about them using fake organs for doing a lot of these testing and all that. I mean, they're leaving out the whole consciousness aspect of this stuff. How can you properly do lab testing on these things when you're when you're leaving out the consciousness aspect of humanity?
Well, that's why I think there's a lot of hubris involved in this agenda, that they're very arrogant, and they also think their ability to affect certain technological advances are much greater than they actually are. You know, if you ask these people back in the early 2000s where AI would be today, they totally thought it was going to be much more advanced than it is right now, for sure. And I think even now, like, since we've seen the COVID stuff happen, even in that period of time with everyone locked down and all the money they started pouring into AI and all the data that they were harvesting from people's life being increasingly online, people being increasingly on their phones and in front of the screen as a result of lockdowns and all of this stuff, as well as the harvesting of genetic data through COVID-19 testing and all of that stuff, they expected all of that influx of data to really, like, make AI pop off, and it hasn't. And of course, AI never has 100% accuracy rate. There's no AI with 100% accuracy at all. And if you look at some of the AI companies around today, one that I wrote about last year is Diagnostic Robotics, which is like an IDF-linked health diagnostic company based on AI that claims to be able to predict what communities will have COVID-19 outbreaks before symptoms show. That's what they claim anyway. According to their company, their company's own metrics analysis of their algorithm, it's 79-78% accurate. And that's never been vetted by anyone independent. So it's very possible it could be 50%. But if
or
you
less.
Believe there's right. So if you even believe their statistics, you know, they're wrong like 25% of the time, like one out of four times. Essentially, I mean, that's really freaking bad when you're making giant policy decisions and counting on AI to micromanage the lives of billions of people. Like I was saying, I mean, this is total hubris, and they're really counting on people, especially people in the quote unquote resistance, basically buying their propaganda about this and how inevitable this world they're trying to build is and all of that stuff. So we just kind of sit back and are like, well, there's nothing we can do. And there are some people in independent media, I think, that play into this a bit, that do sort of buy a lot of the propaganda these guys put out on their, you know, NGO, nonprofit, you know, splash pages and stuff. And like, look, this is coming. Look, we're going to do this. When their actual capability to create and produce that technology in the real world is several years, decades off even. And there's immediate things right now that are going on that we can stop.
Where can our listeners track you down? Where can we get more Whitney Webb? I mean, the hour and we're already...
It's flown by.
Yeah. Man.
All right. So I'm at Rockfin, rockfin.com. You guys are there as well. My channel there is not under Whitney Webb. It's under Unlimited Hangout. My website is unlimitedhangout.com. Unlimited Hangout also has a Telegram channel that I would encourage you to follow, as opposed to Twitter, where I'll probably be deplatformed in a matter of months. I'm surprised it let me go on for this long. I don't have a Facebook, the best way is probably just to subscribe to my email list by going to unlimitedhangout.com, where you can find all of my work, including the work that gets published at The Last American Vagabond, which you can also follow as well. Other people like Derek Bros right there as well. And Ryan Christian's videos are there. as well for those that are interested in their content as well. But if you scroll to the bottom, you can subscribe to the mailing list and get all my stuff when it comes out sent to your inbox.
So Unlimited Hangout is like investigative journalism type stuff? Like the stuff you're talking about is you have a bunch of writers there doing articles on
Not a bunch of writers. I mean, it's mostly me, right? But there's a few other contributors that we have. But it focuses specifically on long-form investigative pieces. So a lot of the reads are really long. We try and reduce a lot of the longer ones, including my recent really long article, but important article on Welcome Leap that just came out in a podcast version, essentially, where we discuss a lot of the same stuff, including an organization that's very much like them called the Trinity Challenge, which is basically the Gates Foundation version of Welcome Leap, which is the Welcome Trust's global health DARPA. The Trinity Challenge is about funding basically mass surveillance of the wilderness and rural areas for preventing the next pandemic. I would argue it's to make sure people stay on the smart city plantations is what they're hoping to do with that. But that's like a Gates Foundation, Facebook and Microsoft and Google backed venture.
Oh, so. My God. Oh, right on. Well, we'll send everybody there. Yeah. Thanks. Thanks for your time.
Thanks for coming on the show, Whitney. Have a wonderful evening. I guess it's pretty late over there already.
So. Yeah, it's all right though. Thanks. My pleasure.
Okay, yeah. Awesome.
See Have a good one. Thanks. Come back anytime. And that was our chat with Whitney Webb. What'd you think?
Hey, yeah, that was good. Yep. Like I said in the outro, she's full of knowledge. I don't know how people can retain it all.
It seems like it's been a long time coming.
Yeah.
Seems crazy we've gone this long without having her on yet.
Yeah. Yeah, in the second half, we get into the UN and China and the Philippines with Duterte and talk about her Patreon and the cancel culture and stakeholder capitalism, the Population Council, Operation Condor, the White Helmets, climate change after 9/11, the lockdown state of Chile. She was living in Chile and, man, hearing what it's like in some of those other countries, dude, it just shows you how pre-programmed we can get as society, as culture. Like, I feel like that's coming to the West, you know, it's coming here, but it gives you a sense of why freedom in the West, it was so important.
Yes, sure does. Speaking of freedom in the West, we just got a little bit of freedom today. They did actually finally turf that 110-year-old legislation that sort of opened up the door for forced vaccines.
In Alberta or
in
Canada?
Alberta. In Alberta specifically, it was trashed today. And our premier came out today and said flat out that there will not be money. He said shit before and just lied about it.
I don't believe him.
But he's the first guy in Canada to come out like Texas and Florida and these other states that have said it's not happening here. So we'll see if the legislation follows. They did finally trash the forced inoculation amendment. So,
yeah, I just don't. I mean, I think that's great news, but I'm holding my breath. I don't believe anything these politicians say right now.
No, that's right. So, it's tough to believe them.
Yeah.
So if you guys do want to hear more of our ramblings, head over to grimerica.ca, listen to the other show where we do extended intros and all that sort of stuff. You can listen to our lazy Canadian ramblings over there. What was I going to say? I thought I had something.
About the second half of support,
grimericaoutlaw.ca. If you want to get that second hour, that fantastic second hour, this is what show number 31, now 32. Of course, the back catalog will start to chop off now when we get to
33.
In around 33, we'll carry 33 episodes at all time. And the back episodes will slowly fall off. So you want to get...
Then they'll be there for the subscribers, right?
Yeah, exactly. So if you're ready to show, make sure you've listened to the back catalog or you download them all before that happens. Or you could just head over to grimericaoutlaw.ca today, sign up for that plus subscription, get all the extra episodes, get all the twice as long interviews and all that fantastic stuff. And we would just love you for it.
Awesome.
Yeah. So check all that stuff out. Sign up for Plus if you can. We love you. Thanks for listening. And we will see you next week.
Who's gonna kill this sacred cow? You were never political anyhow. Since when did you start trusting in the government? Since when was it okay to to ridicule and shame your neighbor. Your opinions have become, your opinions have become as fickle as artificial flavors. What matters most to you? What the TV host told you to do? Or a moral compass that points true north, oh true. Who's gonna kill this sacred cow? You were never religious anyhow. Since when did you kiss the ring on the hand of the Pope? Since when do we need pharmaceuticals to cope? Your soul has become, ever-loving soul has become, as brittle as communion wafers. What matters most to you? What the Holy Ghost told you to do? Or a moral compass that points true north, oh true. I'm gonna kill this sacred cow. Bureaucrats think I'm non-essential anyhow. Since when has our culture become so lowbrow? It's all touchscreens, and nobody has any know-how. Your idea of fun, your idea of fun, is taking 1,001 photos of your duck face. Matters most to you what the celebrity's post told you was cool, or a moral compass that points true north, oh true. I'm gonna kill this sacred cow. I'm gonna kill your 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 sacred cow. I'm gonna kill, I'm gonna kill.